This is WBUR.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Bowing to mounting global pressure, Iraq said yesterday that it would allow weapons inspectors back into the country for the first time since 1998. Now that the doors are opening again, can weapons inspections actually work as an alternative to regime change, to war? The Bush administration says that inspections are not enough, suggesting that the Iraqi government's offer is a tactical step to avert real reform or military action. Julia Preston has been reporting on the story for the New York Times. She joins us now from New York. Good evening and welcome, Julia Preston.
Good evening.
Julia, what's the buzz at the UN? It seemed only a few days ago that lots of folks, including perhaps the entire Security Council, was climbing up on the George Bush bandwagon. Now we've got the offer of inspections. Is there celebration? Are people falling off the bandwagon? What's the buzz?
Well, we had quite a difference of view here today. The Bush administration is anxious to continue to press its plan for a tough Security Council resolution before the end of the week. But we had France, Russia, a number of key nations on the Security Council that broke with that position today and said that the Iraqi initiative had essentially defused the crisis.
Does that mean that the countries that George Bush and his administration were counting on to countenance war if necessary are now not there?
Well, I think it means that the administration is going to have a little bit of a struggle to recover the momentum here. I think the underlying concept of the administration is that Saddam Hussein is not really likely to disarm, even if there are inspectors in the country, and they would like to leave open the option of using military force against him. And this is an idea that does not yet have broad acceptance here at the United Nations.
Is that because other nations believe that inspections will actually work, despite the decade of failure that George Bush points to?
Well, I think the European Union and Russia and other nations on the Council do have more faith than the Bush administration in these inspections.
Does that mean that the UN Security Council vote is lost for now? Can you imagine Washington bringing it around again somehow?
Well, I think that we will see quite an effort by the Bush administration this week. Secretary Powell said today that he wants to rewrite the mandate for these weapons inspectors before they go back to Iraq. And so I think that the administration has something new up its sleeve in terms of really upping the ante on what these inspectors will accomplish. And it's going to be quite a diplomatic battle and game here this week to see if the administration can pull that out.
How does Kofi Annan come out looking after this 3 or 4 days since he and George Bush spoke back-to-back in the well of the U.N. with rather different messages? George Bush seemed to trump Annan that day, embracing the U.N., but seeming to pull the U.N. toward a very Washington agenda.
Well, I think that Mr. Annan is really walking a very fine line here. He, was widely praised at the United Nations for his bold speech about multilateralism, appealing to the world's powers to take the multilateral route. And then, the Bush administration came around to that, and there was a broad sense of relief when that happened. Mr. Annan was at the center of the negotiations this week that brought Iraq to make its offer to resume weapons inspections, and he had to do quite a fine dance, I think, with the Arab nations and with Europe and with Russia to keep it all together. So far, I think his stock is very high, but I know that American officials are rather frustrated that that he, in their view, allowed Iraq to resume the weapons inspections without really providing a firm guarantee that they would cooperate with the inspectors once they're back on the ground.
And is there a sense that the terms of a new round of inspection could be written in such a way that they would be more effective than the last time around?
Well, I think that's the administration's hope, and You know, a number of key nations, particularly Russia, said today that they think that the ground rules that are established in existing resolutions are already pretty good. You know, we saw last week how persuasive the president can be and the United States can be as the world's really only superpower when it wants to get something done. And I think what we may be seeing for the rest of the week is perhaps another example of how that works.
Superpower arm twisting.
Yes.
Julia Preston, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you for having me.
Julia Preston is covering the United Nations for the New York Times. We're talking tonight about weapons inspections, diplomacy, and the threat of war with Iraq. Can weapons inspections work and avert U.S. military intervention in Iraq, or the need for it? Do you trust inspections, and trust them or not? Has Iraq's offer of inspections robbed George Bush of a potential U.N. coalition for war? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Richard Butler. He's former chairman of the United Nations Special Commission to Disarm Iraq. He joins us from Sydney, Australia. Good evening and welcome, Richard Butler.
Good evening.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine, Jack Beattie. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Richard Butler, you served for 2 years on the ground nearly in Iraq in search of weapons, inspecting, as it were. Do you think that a new regime of inspections can be effective? Can it be more effective than last time?
Yes, I do. I agree with Colin Powell that the existing regime, that's in Resolution 1284, to establish the body that succeeded UNSCOM, the one that I led, is not adequate to the present task. The inspectors are fine. The inspectors are skilled. The database they have is fine. But the rules under which they would get access are not the rules that are required today. And I think a quite simple Security Council resolution could fix that. And I agree with Colin Powell that is what's required. Now, in addition, there is one other thing, utterly, centrally required. And it never existed in the past, and it needs to be provided now if war is to be avoided. And that is, Iraq must cooperate. It must be prepared genuinely to allow inspectors to go anywhere, anytime, to prove or disprove Iraq's claim that it has no weapons of mass destruction.
But that's a huge must, isn't it, Richard Butler? I mean, how does any dictate by the United Nations force Iraq day in and day out on the ground to cooperate, and cooperate without condition and fully, as you say, it must?
Well, it manifestly can't. That's the whole problem that we face.
So is this just a joke?
We've had a decade of saying to Iraq that this is the law and this is your obligation, and as long as you're not obeying it, you'll have sanctions on your people and all of the deprivation that represents.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, the dictator of Iraq has refused to offer the cooperation required. People forget too readily. It's crystal clear and simple. The sanctions on Iraq are tied to the removal of the weapons of mass destruction. Saddam, at any stage, could have removed the sanctions on 22 million ordinary Iraqis if he'd simply handed over the weapons of mass destruction.
So Richard Butler, please.
He chose not to.
Help us to understand, because this is exactly the point, I think, at which many of our American listeners feel a genuine confusion. There's a lot of support now for inspections. You're saying if they're fully enforced, great, they can work. But you're also saying Saddam Hussein has never fully cooperated, even at the expense of the entire Iraqi population. So is it a viable option to bring Iraq into a state of secure compliance with the UN mandate?
I welcome the question, and my honest answer is I'm not sure that it would ever work, but I do think that the principles that I've outlined are clear and their practical implication is clear, and it comes down to this. If the dictator of Iraq is prepared to, it wants to have his country released from sanctions and to have Iraq rejoin the international community as a more or less normal state, where now its status is that of an outlaw, then there's one thing he should do, which is hand over the weapons of mass destruction. You think of it. If he did that, I mean, the United States and the hawkish members of the Bush administration wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
How would you
Everything would have been completed. Now,
Richard, let me ask you, how would you want to see the inspection regime changed so that it was that it was effective, that it instilled confidence in you that those weapons of mass destruction were actually gone? What would it mean in material terms in Iraq when UN teams presumably start going in? What would they have to look like?
There is a simple answer to that, which is anywhere, anytime. You see, the original law under which we worked said that we could go anywhere, anytime. But as we did that and found things that Iraq didn't want us to find and caused them to be destroyed, Iraq got very angry about that, and they brought about a situation with some Security Council support in 1985 mm-hmm. where that go anywhere, anytime rule got modified in respect to so-called sensitive sites where we couldn't go anywhere, anytime. And that's what has to change. I'm sure that Secretary Powell will be making that point in the days ahead.
And can anywhere, anytime be accomplished without almost the equivalent of some kind of invasion, without a significant military force there?
No. It's far simpler than that. These aren't military people. These aren't armed people. These are people with instruments of measurement and Geiger counters and stuff like that. You know, little wet chemistry sets, if you like. This is not so invasive. Look, I don't wish to sound naive because I genuinely believe I'm not a naive person. Mm-hmm. What I'm speaking here is an inner logic. The inner logic here is that if Saddam wants to be free of all of this, and now if he wants to avoid a military attack upon his country, he's got one simple thing to do, which is to give up these evil weapons and to allow inspectors to go anywhere, anytime, to see that he really has given up all of them. Now, as long as he doesn't do that, no matter how that's put, in terms of some nice diplomatic game, some negotiation, mm-hmm. some ploys, some delays, and so on, I think he's in for trouble. Because I do believe that this administration in the United States today is serious.
And how long should Saddam be given to persuade a new inspection round that he's got a clean bill of health on weapons of mass destruction? Six months?
No, I'm not sure exactly how long it would take because we haven't been there for 4 years, and that complicates the picture a bit. But I will chance my arm and say this. He's got a matter of weeks, not months, weeks, to see inspectors back in the country. And there's a matter of a month or so for them to start their initial work at important sites. And if any of them are blocked or hindered, if it's clear that Saddam is actually playing the cheat and retreat game again, mm-hmm. then quite frankly, I think he should fasten his seatbelt, because my understanding is that this administration is not fooling, that it means it, and it's not going to tolerate any more of this.
Richard Butler, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Richard Butler was the former head of the United Nations Special Commission to Disarm Iraq in 1997 to 1999. He joined us from Sydney, Australia. Jack Beatty, there's a voice of experience that's ready to give it one more try, but says the terms anywhere, anytime have to be met.
Very high terms. But, you know, assuming that, you know, one can assume perhaps that Saddam has concluded that his weapons of mass destruction are now a wasting asset and that he's got all he can out of them by way of intimidation, by way of deterrence of the U.S., perhaps, and now he's going to hand them over. Now, assume that's the case and assume that Bush's speech helped to concentrate his mind and the war talk, and one can really make the case that there was a victory this week in recent weeks for American coercive diplomacy, and that the Bush administration, as Senator Dick Durbin put it today, perhaps should take yes for an answer.
You're saying, Jack, that you can imagine Saddam saying, all right, I destroy all the weapons, come on in, I'm going to quit the weapons of mass destruction game because the threat of invasion is too real for me to risk.
That's right. And, you know, you can say, well, why didn't he do it before? Well, it might have been because he hoped to deter such an invasion as ours. But now he's concluded that far from deterring it, his efforts, such as they are, and by the way, they remain murky, are provoking it. Hence, a wasting asset.
A wasting asset. So many imponderables, so much to think about here. We're talking tonight about inspections, diplomacy, and the threat of war with Iraq. Will inspections work? What will work here? Diplomacy, war, U.S. snoops looking under Iraq's covers. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about inspections, diplomacy, and the threat of war with Iraq. Will inspections work? Has President Bush been outfoxed by Iraq, boxed in by his own approach to the United Nations? Should the Bush administration, as Senator Dick Durbin says, take yes for an answer on inspections? Or is regime change still the only way? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined now by Lawrence Korb. He's joining us from Fort Lee, New York. He is Vice President of the Council on Foreign Relations and was former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration from 1981 to 1985. Good evening and welcome back to the program, Lawrence Korb.
Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. Lawrence Korb, take us into this thicket. There's almost a little whiplash feeling here in these last few days. Last Thursday, George Bush stood in front of the UN, made what was considered on almost all sides a very powerful and persuasive speech. We started seeing UN Security Council members appear to climb up on the war bandwagon. Now we've got this announcement from Iraq, weapons inspections without conditions. Suddenly the coalition that seemed to be coalescing seems to be going the other way. Is this a victory for the Bush administration or a setback?
Well, it's a victory for the Bush administration if they want to take it. But when the president went to the UN, he didn't go because he really wanted to. He felt he had to go, given the concern among members of his own party, people like Brent Scowcroft and Jim Baker, members of the Congress like Senators Lugar, Hagel, and Congressman Armey, basically said, you can't do this alone. You've got to do this under the aegis of the United Nations. So he went to the United Nations. Everybody thought he was brilliant, because he said, hey, your credibility's on the line here. But what the United Nations wants is not regime change. What our allies want is not regime change. They want an end to Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. And so in the short term, by allowing the inspectors to go in, we'll find out if he's sincere. And if he's sincere, then there's no reason for regime change on the part of the rest of the world. If he's not, obviously, then you've got a case to go in with the force of arms. And if you do that, in effect, by destroying his weapons, you'll probably bring about a regime change.
We're going to get into that. That possibility obviously still remains. But I think we're fascinated by the dynamics of this incredible handful of days. Who's outmaneuvering whom here? Iraq, the U.S., Kofi Annan, Colin Powell, George Bush. Whose jujitsu has put the inspections back on top, or is this just a coincidence?
No, I think Saddam has outmaneuvered us, at least in the short term, by putting regime change off the table for the rest of the world, because Bush going to the United Nations said you've got to enforce your own edicts, and the edicts don't talk about regime change. They talk about destroying his weapons of mass destruction. And I think the key was when the Saudis over the weekend said that if the UN authorizes action, they would support that, because if the Saudis allowed the United States to use its bases, to have overflight rights, in fact, the campaign against Iraq would be very, very short, and the administration could achieve its objectives with a minimal loss of life.
So is George Bush kicking himself tonight for ever having gone to that darn UN in the first place? Half his party doesn't like it anyway.
Well, I think he and many members of his party are. And, you know, you got Bush in his gut would like to go for regime change, but I think his head is telling them that he really needs the rest of the world. And I'm sure there are many members of the administration who are thinking that Saddam would never have said inspections without conditions that are clearly frustrated tonight.
Do you think, Lawrence Korb, that the American partners, if you will, on the Security Council are tonight feeling genuinely reassured that we're perhaps going on to the inspection path instead of war, believing that that will work? Or is there a sense of comeuppance for the United States that George Bush came in, laid down the law, and everything drove off in a different direction anyway?
No, I think there might be some feeling about that, but I think by and large what they're saying is, look, it was the fear of American invasion, American overwhelming power that got him to allow the inspectors back in without conditions. I mean, I think we really need to recognize that had not Bush been so aggressive talking about this really since the State of the Union address and raising this to the attention of the world, that there would have been no hope of getting the inspectors back in. So I think they're basically saying, you know, you deserve some credit here. Let's go ahead and see and find out, because most of the world does not want a war with Iraq because they're not quite sure what would happen once we start dropping bombs and firing. Things may get out of control. You could have unleashed the weapons of mass destruction in that part of the world.
So, Jack Beatty, there's a victory if the White House wants to claim it. On the other hand, George W. Bush is famously devoted to original goals once he lays it out. And everybody knows from the very beginning regime change was the byword here. Can you imagine that the White House is celebrating the unconditional inspections offered by Iraq, or do you think heads are spinning and angry there?
Well, I think there's clearly some frustration on their part. But Bush has shown himself throughout his political career to be able to sort of take other people's position and claim them his own. If you look at the Department of Homeland Security, where he resisted that all through, you know, from October through April, and then when people were starting to ask questions about the whole what he knew and when did he knew before September 11th, boy, he hopped on that bandwagon and claimed it as his own.
Jack Beatty, what's your sense of the White House at this point? Celebrating a victory or grinding its teeth?
Well, I don't know. I think the Secretary of State should celebrate a victory. I have the feeling that he's the one that talked the president into the UN speech. And, you know, we've had two cycles of international reaction, one to the Bush speech and the Saddam response. But earlier we had a reaction to the Cheney and Rumsfeld speeches, which Rumsfeld said, as we know, you do it and without the allies, and they come along afterwards, and Cheney saying, inspectors, that's just not going to do it. That's a fool's game. We don't even want to bother with that. Throwing away the casus belli for the rest of the world. Now, the reaction to that, I think, was just kind of amazing. You had Brent Scowcroft, you had Baker, you had the other people that Lawrence Karp talked about, and you had governments all over the world saying, wait a minute. And I think Bush really reacted to that. There was some evidence, you know, that Cheney was even unilateral with Bush in making that speech. According to Newsweek, he had not cleared with Bush his throwing away of inspectors as something that we just shouldn't even bother with. So it could be that the forces of reason, as I see them at least, Colin Powell in this administration, won a victory when the hawks were just when their policy was essentially greeted with horror.
So maybe the cowpoke from Crawford, Texas is switching horses here, but it's not his style. Lawrence Korb, Jack Beatty, stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Dana's calling from Wellfleet, Massachusetts. Hi, Dana. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
excuse me. I'd like to preface my remark by saying that I'm very frightened by the fact that the mightiest military history has ever known is commanded by an adolescent cowboy who is not, in my opinion, mature enough to be a statesman. And
well, maybe or maybe not, but there are an awful lot of seasoned veterans around him.
Well, yeah, that scares me, too. I mean, Colin Powell is probably the only independent thinker in the group.
So are you welcoming the turn to inspections, Dana?
Yes, and I think, now, I'm not naive enough to believe that, you know, Saddam has had a nice change of heart. You know, he had an epiphany in the middle of the night, he's having a change of heart. But let's follow up on it. Let's give diplomacy a chance, because I don't think W wants to do that. He's just too anxious to go in and have a big fight and show America's might, display America's might as sort of like a symbol of his manhood. And I don't think he can see through the consequences of an invasion of Iraq. Or maybe they done made some other plans. There's an article in the Sunday Herald of Scotland that maybe they had plans for the Middle East, which included Iraq, you know, long before he officially took office in January.
There's talk about all kinds of plans, but,
yeah,
but what's announced so far has a lot to do with Iraq disarming. Dana, thank you for your call. Lawrence Korb, this move must have been anticipated by the Bush administration. The Baghdad has shown itself a wily and alert maneuverer under the threat of war before. They must have known that when it really got hot, Baghdad would play this card.
Well, I don't think so, because if you look at Iraq's statements, see, up until last week, they kept saying, you know, we're not going to let them in. We don't want American spies. They've talked about regime change, so how can we let the inspectors in? It'll be all part of a U.S. plot. No, I don't think they ever thought he would let them in with no conditions. I think they thought he would probably, you know, get involved in some sort of negotiations.
But no conditions is easy to say and maybe also easy to frustrate, isn't it? I mean, if the choice is a U.S. or coalition invading army or inspectors coming in, if it's come down to that, who wouldn't choose inspectors?
Well, again, but, you know, Saddam, if he was perfectly logical back in 1991 after we had 500,000 people in the desert, would have withdrawn from Kuwait, picked a couple oil fields on the way, gone home and declared victory. And in fact, if you read Schwarzkopf's book, you know, General Schwarzkopf was very concerned that, in fact, that might happen.
Lawrence Korb, Jack Beatty, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation now Gary Mulholland. He's director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. He joins us from Bethesda, Maryland. Good evening and welcome, Gary Mulholland.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. You have spent a lot of time looking at issues of disarmament and particularly nuclear disarmament around the world. What is your level of confidence that UN inspectors can go into Iraq and come out and say with confidence and accuracy to the world, there's a clean bill of health here, the weapons of mass destruction are gone, there's no more program, that's all over with?
I don't think there's any chance that that will happen unless Saddam Hussein changes heart and provides the world and the inspectors with a clear statement of what he actually has. I think the public doesn't understand that inspections are meant to verify declarations. So the first obligation here is on the part of Saddam and his government. He has to declare what he has. He has to declare all of his programs, how much of everything he's made. He has to answer many outstanding questions about the status of his programs, what happened to certain things that we know he imported but hasn't accounted for. So that really has to come first.
But hasn't the presumption been for a long time, and surely still today, that Saddam Hussein is not likely to come clean with that kind of full accounting? And if he doesn't, can the inspection teams, playing the cat and mouse game or however it's played, go in and force out the truth?
No, if he decides that he's going to continue the practice that he's been following, which is to try to mislead and foil the inspectors, I don't think there's any chance that they're going to be able to find the things that he has hidden. There are a number of reasons for that. First, I don't think this new group of inspectors is set up to use intelligence information very well. Second, Saddam has learned how to hide things. He's learned what we can see. And third, he's invested a lot of money in making many of his programs mobile. That is, they can hit the road before the inspectors arrive at sites. So if you put all that together, it just looks to me as if it would be very hard for them to go in and come out with confidence that they found everything, particularly if he's still lying.
And if they cannot do that, and Saddam doesn't suddenly turn over a leaf and become a truth teller extraordinaire, Then what's all this about, Gary Mulholland, the inspections? Is this a farce, or is this a useful way of putting off war and stepping back from a precipice for everybody?
Well, I think what we're facing here are two alternatives, neither of which is very good. First, we don't invade Iraq. We let the programs continue. That entails the risk that he could be farther along than we think, and that he could get a bomb here through some means or other, and we wouldn't find out until it explodes. The other risk is we go in and we take casualties, and we don't have a formula for making Iraq into a better place than it is now, or a more stable place, and so we wind up with a negative result in the Middle East. Those are the two real alternatives, and a lot of people now are grasping at inspections as a way around that choice.
Gary Mulholland, you're no hawk, but you followed nuclear proliferation and disarmament for many years. Which path would you choose, inspection or war?
I think that if we can get Saddam to the point where he believes that either he has to give up the programs or give up power, that he may well give up the programs. But I think to get him to that point, unfortunately, it's a paradox. You have to be ready to wage war against him, and you have to make him believe that you're ready.
But if we're ready to wage war, but we depend on inspectors to certify that he's given it up, Is that a viable way to put him against the wall, or is he just going to lie to the very end, say, yes, I've given it up? Believe me.
We really don't know that yet. I think what Powell has to do is he has to fashion a resolution that's going to accelerate finding out. It's going to have to telescope this process to the point where we give if the inspectors go back in, and it looks like they will, they have to go back in under a new dispensation that will allow us to find out whether Saddam's going to cooperate in a hurry. And if he doesn't, then I don't think there's any alternative but to face the first alternative, which is either war or taking the risk over the long term. And I suspect that we'll opt for war, but that's not... Now, that's above my pay grade. That's a political decision the president will make. So,
but we hear the judgment you're making. Gary Mulholland, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
Gary Mulholland is director of the Wisconsin Project on Nuclear Arms Control. Michael's calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
That was the most insightful bit of analysis I have heard in 2 or 3 months. He is absolutely right. And I would like to say that I think the middle ground there is that what we have to do is continue, and I also am not a hawk. I don't think that we ought to go to war immediately. Mm-hmm. But if we continue to build up troops on the borders of Iraq, make it clear to Saddam Hussein that we're going to name the buildings, and any building that is that the U.N. inspectors are prohibited from seeing, they have 24 hours, and then we target it for destruction, which is, you know, we're not necessarily declaring war, but we're going into that building. You say no, you got 24 hours. Get your people out. And we're destroying it. If it's a hospital that he's hiding things in, then we roll the tanks in. And we basically say we want every single building that is made available to us under the threat of immediate annihilation of that particular site.
Michael, our time is running down to the break, but thank you for your call. Lawrence Korb, can we put on a vice that tight?
Well, sure, you can. And, you know, if he denies you a certain facility, you have the wherewithal to bomb it.
Do you think the U.N. will countenance a vice
again,
that tight?
If you can get the resolution passed to have what you might call coercive inspections and allow the United States to and the other allies to back it up. But the real point is what Gary made. I don't think he'll let you go wherever you want. The mm-hmm. question is, will you know where to go? That's going to be the real issue, because I think that he'll let them go wherever they want. But, you know, there's a lot of places they may not be able to think about going.
So are you going to feel secure this side of regime change, Lawrence Korb?
Well, sure, but I don't think there's an immediate threat from Saddam. And if nothing else, these inspectors will slow things down. It will slow his development down, and then we'll just have to see whether, in fact, we can provide them the intelligence that they need to continue to go. After all, they work, as Richard Butler said before, they work reasonably well for 4 or 5 years, destroyed about 95% of his capability on biological and chemical weapons. So you're making a step in the right direction. But the real problem is the United States has the wherewithal to go, but you don't want to go by yourself, because if you go by yourself, the casualty is going to be much higher, and then we're going to own the place, and we're going to have to spend, as Larry Lindsey, the chairman of the Council on Economic Advisors, said, you might be spending $200 billion in putting it back together again.
Lawrence Korb, stand by. We've got to take a short break. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Will inspections work? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
287. This is WBUR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about weapons inspections, diplomacy, and the threat of war with Iraq. Our guest tonight is Lawrence Korb, former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration and Vice President of the Council on Foreign Relations. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. Dean is on the line. Hi, Dean. You're on the air.
Hi. I am absolutely amazed that such high-powered people as Richard Butler can be so naive.
In what dimension? What dimension, Dean?
Nothing Saddam can do can change this. Let's take...
Can change
the fact that the Bush administration wants a war and is going to have a war. And it'll probably come in January, maybe December. But let's say Saddam has 5 weapons of mass destruction, and let's say he gives up the 5 weapons as Richard Butler at the beginning of the program suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Bush will then say, you've got 8, you've got to give us the other 3 or we will go in and get them.
So you see the train on the tracks, you see the war coming, you see no way around it. Dean, thank you for your
Absolutely
call. Lawrence Korb, what about it? Do you think the Bush administration is so set on this war path that nothing Iraq can do will lead Washington to say, good.
No, I don't think so, because it's just not the administration and the so-called hawks there. He's got the opinion of the rest of the world, and he's got opinion in his own party. And I think the caller has a point. Were it not for the concerns expressed by people like Scowcroft and Baker and members of his own party and the rest of the world, he might have gone. But our military is saying to him, look, if you go without the rest of the world, it's going to be much more difficult. From my old logistics background from in the Pentagon, to be able to put a couple hundred thousand people into Iraq without the support of Saudi Arabia is just going to be a logistic nightmare, and it's going to be much more difficult to do. That's why I said earlier, the real key, I think, to changing Saddam's mind was Saudi Arabia saying, if the UN approves this, we will allow you to use our bases and to have overflight rights.
And for a moment, that meant game over. Morton's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Morton. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I'm very annoyed. It seems like the very same people, i.e. the left and the Western Europeans, who would urge us to go into Bosnia, for example, and save that country, are the same ones that are denying us the right to protect our own country. As George Will pointed out in an editorial this weekend, these people were presented with the same evidence before 9/11 about Osama bin Laden. They would have gone through the same song and dance about needing an international coalition, needing to have more proof, more evidence.
Morton, you're saying liberals and lousy Europeans are keeping us from the right to go to war with Iraq?
Well, yes, I think they are. In fact, that's what's happening. I really don't understand that we have rescued Western Europe three times in this century.
What if there's an inspections procedure that would defang Saddam Hussein?
I just think the idea that, you know, I think Western diplomacy is, I think diplomacy is a Western civilization construct. I think people like Saddam, you don't do diplomacy with them. The people of that ilk, especially in the Middle East, respond to force. Israel's proven that time and again. And I think this idea that you're dealing with traditional Western European, Western civilization diplomacy is really a ruse, that these people only understand force or, as your callers have mentioned, the threat of force.
Morton, we've got it. There's a vote for war. Michael's on the line. Welcome, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. We might dodge a bullet this time, but there's a longer-term question. What do we do when everyone is able to have weapons of mass destruction very easily? Technological change changes the circumstances, and it may just not be possible to live in a world anymore where we're the only one who's capable of mass destruction. And the question is, how do we adapt to that?
Jack Beatty, there's a scary thought. If technology just continues to be disseminated and the capacity for mass destruction becomes ever more widespread, how do you put the hammer down on that?
Yeah, and, you know, there's the place for leadership. And yet then we have a program, the Nunn-Lugar program, to remove nuclear material from Russia. And the president, and through hawks in his administration, they don't want to fund it to the level that's needed. So there, where you go right to the source, and you could buy out what is the largest extant supply of nuclear material, and the administration doesn't want to get involved in it. It doesn't want to get involved in it in the degree that they should. And they don't want to sign a nuclear test ban treaty, which would help to obviously help to contain testing on nuclear weapons. So yes, I think the administration needs to look at the real threats that terrorism poses. And when you start doing that, you look at those Russian nukes and you look at the treaties and you say, we've got to get serious about this.
Lawrence Korb, can we apply a global regime that keeps us from having to face this same kind of dilemma another year or two or five down the road?
Sure, I think we already have one. We have a treaty that bans the production of chemical weapons. We, United States, has signed that. There's a biological weapons treaty, and it was Richard Nixon who renounced the use of biological weapons by the United States, destroyed our stockpile. Another 170 nations went along with us, and then we didn't ratify the protocol. In fact, the Bush administration walked out of it.
But do protocols really apply to rogue regimes and terrorists?
Well, I think you set a standard in the international arena, and that will prevent other nations from aiding these rogues. I mean, North Korea signed the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and that's the basis on which the international community went in and said, if you don't give up these reactors that you're making, you know, we reserve the right to attack.
So you don't see lethal technology becoming so commonplace and widespread that it can flourish at a subnational level?
Well, I think, sure, it can, and that's why it's important to enforce programs, as just mentioned, like Nunn-Lugar. This administration cut back the funding for Nunn-Lugar. You know, people talk about Saddam giving a weapon to Al-Qaeda. I'm much more worried about them buying one from the Russian mob, for example. There are many more of them and much easier to get.
And just across the border, Lawrence Corbett, has been terrific, as always, to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining
nice
us tonight.
Nice to be with you.
Lawrence Corbett is Vice President of the Council on Foreign Relations and former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration from 1981 to 1985. Coming up, a former UN weapons inspector hand delivers a warning to Baghdad. This is On Point. As United Nations weapons inspector in Iraq, Scott Ritter saw for himself much of the inner workings of Baghdad and beyond. But on Sunday, September 8th, he saw a new side. On that day, the former weapons inspector delivered a speech before a special session of Iraq's National Assembly, the first American ever invited to address the group. Ritter has been a vocal critic of the United States' strong-arm position on Iraq. In this speech, Ritter warned the assembly that the U.S. government is actively making a case for war and urged them to let in weapons inspectors before it's too late. Yesterday, Scott Ritter read his speech to an American audience on C-SPAN. Tonight, we bring you excerpts from that speech.
My government is making a case for war against Iraq that is built upon the rhetoric of fear and ignorance, as opposed to the reality of truth and fact. We, the people of the United States, are told repeatedly that we face a grave and imminent risk to our national security from a combination of past irresponsible behavior on the part of Iraq, ongoing efforts by Iraq to reacquire chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, as well as long-range ballistic missiles to deliver these so-called weapons of mass destruction, which have been banned since 1991 by a Security Council resolution, and Iraq's status as a state sponsor of terror, especially alleged links between Iraq and the forces of terror that perpetrated the horrific attack against the United States on September 11th of last year. However, the rhetoric of fear that is disseminated by my government and others has not to date been backed up by hard facts that substantiate any allegations that Iraq is today in possession of weapons of mass destruction or has linked to terror groups responsible for attacking the United States. Void of such facts, all we have is speculation. And there is no basis under international law for a nation to go to war against another nation based upon speculation alone. Because of September 11th, we are a nation fearful of the unknown and more easily prone to exploitation by those with agendas other than legitimate self-defense who play upon these fears. This is the fear of the ignorant, the ill-informed, those not empowered by the facts of a given situation. I've told you that the American people are a great people who ultimately want to do good. In order for this to happen, however, we must find a way to overcome the politics of fear and those who practice it. The best way to do this is to embrace the truth. In regards to the current situation between Iraq and the United States, truth is on the side of Iraq. The truth of the matter is that Iraq has not been shown to possess weapons of mass destruction, either in terms of having retained prohibited capability from the past or by seeking to reacquire such capability today. Iraq needs to help the people of the United States, and indeed the world, become familiar with these truths. In order to do this, Iraq needs to adopt a more welcoming posture to invite the kind of scrutiny that would facilitate the discovery of these truths for good reason, one that could dispel any efforts to cast Iraq as a threat worthy of war. Embrace the American people, especially now in their time of sorrow and pain. Let the United States know that Iraq has the greatest sympathy for the suffering felt by those who lost their loved ones on September 11th, and that Iraq condemns any and all who attack innocents in such a manner. Educate the people of the United States that while Iraqis are, by and large, a Muslim people, they do not support the cause of those who pervert Islam, and that Iraq is, in fact, a bulwark against the spread of this very sort of fundamentalist extremism that characterizes those who attack the United States. Iraq must renounce violence and aggression against all of its neighbors. Iraq should let the American people and the world know that if there is a resolution to the Palestinian crisis that is acceptable to the people of Palestine, Iraq will accept this, that Iraq cannot be more Palestinian than the Palestinians, and that in any case, Iraq rejects the threat or use of force in resolving this crisis. Iraq must show the people of the United States that it will act in a manner respectful of international borders and agreements, and that Iraq will strive to adhere to the internationally accepted standards of human rights. This will not be an easy task, and indeed the road towards the fulfillment of this goal is fraught with danger and difficulty. There are those who wish Iraq harm regardless of the circumstances or costs, and many of these currently reside in my government, in the government of the United States. However, I ask of you to keep in mind what I have shared with you regarding the people of the United States and their relationship with the American government. Once the politics of fear can be defeated by the forces of truth, then the current policies of the United States can be replaced by those that reject confrontation and embrace reconciliation and peaceful coexistence. Have confidence in the American people and the strength of American democracy. I know I do, which is the only reason why I'm here before you today.
Excerpts there of former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter's speech to the Iraqi National Assembly on September 8th, reread on C-SPAN. Jack Beatty, Scott Ritter has been there, and I haven't, but that is an awfully challenging speech. I'm still trying to make sense of it. What he asks for Iraq to renounce aggression against its neighbors, reject force in the Israel-Palestinian conflict, show that it has no weapons of mass destruction, I guess all that makes terrific sense. But his notion that truth is on Iraq's side, maybe it is, but it seems we've seen an awful lot of dissembling for a long time.
Yeah, he seems to me to be going much too far there. I mean, he says of us that we don't know the truth and that we're just operating on the basis of fear and ignorance. And then he just assumes that the Iraqis are telling the truth. This is an extraordinary claim, just given their track record, which isn't to say that we don't lie as well, but nothing is like what we've had out of Saddam over the years. It's a strange speech, and his claim about no hard facts, well, that is certainly true about aid to the terrorists. There are no hard facts there, but Tony Blair on Tuesday is going to release his dossier, and if that has some quote-unquote hard facts about the imminence of peril from Iraq, that could complicate things.
But maybe this is a man so desperate to see war avoided that he's using golden words for the Iraqis.
Well, perhaps so. I wish I had a little more faith in him. He's blotted his escutcheon some. He accepted $400,000 from an Iraqi-American citizen to make a, quote, documentary. I don't know the status of that, but, you have to wonder, where did the Iraqi-American get the $400,000? It's just
on
not
the other
a
hand,
good appearance.
Maybe we could use $400,000 worth of education about Iraq. I don't know.
Maybe so. But it does make me a little dubious about Scott Ritter after all, he didn't have to say truth is on the side of Iraq. That's the kind of thing that makes me think he's just going too far, and it makes me question his motives. Even though I'm certainly on his side, I agree with him. We don't want to go to war on the basis of fear and ignorance, and that's, I think, what we have. But I'm not sure that he's the best witness on this subject.
An extraordinary speech in extraordinary circumstances in the Iraqi National Assembly from American Scott Ritter. Very interesting to hear it. Jack Beatty, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Micheline Boudreau, Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Sabi Mir, Chris Bonacci, and Oliver Reed. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is W.